Today is Thursday. It is December 27th, 2018. It is 11:09 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record in the studios of WGN Radio in Chicago, even though technically I'm on vacation. You can hear me weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 to noon. Scott Stantis.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and the co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I am Eric Zorn, the resolute columnist for the Chicago Tribune, three times a week in your newspaper or online.
Steve Bertrand and the rest of the gang aren't here. Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman, etc. They are on vacation. I was heading out the door today. Brenda said, you know, most people don't work on their vacation days. And I thought, this isn't fair to my family. So apologies to Brenda and Griffin and Grant and Daisy, with whom I should be spending more time today.
I have worked on almost every vacation I've taken in the last 2 years. Something happens, and so I draw a cartoon from some cheesy, terrible hotel in the middle of Globe, Arizona or something.
I just want to say that I consider the Mincing Rascals listeners to be family, and I do not consider this to be work.
Yeah, I'm going to try that when I get home. So. I'll let you know how that plays out. So let's actually start with something you brought up, Eric, and that is your annual predictions. You do this as a newspaper column, and you do it online, and we've done this on this podcast in the past. I looked at your 342 questions you asked your listeners to respond to,
40.
And it boiled it down to some. Can we use my list, or should we use yours?
Let's use your list, because it's boiled down.
It's 40 of them. Let's start now.
I have 40 questions. Of them are sort of small. I admit, is Pat Fitzgerald going to stay at Northwestern as a football coach?
I think he will.
That's not, yeah, well, yeah. I do too.
Although he could coach anywhere. He could coach in the NFL. He could coach in the SEC if he wanted. But I think
coach
he'll stay.
In arena football, do they still have that? He could coach there. No, I think
the XFL is rebooting.
I think the Packers are going to go after him. I think some other pro teams may go after him. Some other colleges may go after him. He's a very good football coach.
No, he's a good man. He's a good coach.
But he bleeds purple, I believe, is the expression.
I think that's it. Great graduation rate. In fact, I think the Northwestern Wildcat football program has the highest graduation rate in college football.
Hard not to be a fan of that program, and yet I am not.
Why? Because you're a Michigan guy?
I'm a Michigan guy, yeah.
By the way, your dad, you posted a picture of the Christmas tree that your dad made, or trees. Am I right about that?
It's a whole Christmas scene, yes. It's all in metal sculpture and lights.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It is awesome. And I told Brenda, I said, well, is there a website? Are we ordering this online? She goes, no, I just think this is what his dad did.
He does this.
Does he sell those?
No.
He should. Does he want to?
You
should encourage him. I'm in.
Sculpture for him is a hobby, and he also he has installations at universities around the country. But he just does it because he loves to do it. He's never made a dime off it. So
does he want to make a dime off it?
You know, at this point in his life, I don't think he feels like he needs a dime or doesn't have to. Well, you know, everyone can always use a dime, but no, he just. I think that would add to. It's pure what he does. So
it really is.
It's beautiful.
Well done. And if you want to see that, was that in a newspaper column or a Facebook post?
That was on my Facebook page, yeah.
Follow Eric Zorn on Facebook.
I'll give Elif a link for the Facebook page. He's got a sculpture page online. So
he's going to have to hire staff because it's really, really well done.
It's nice.
Will Donald Trump be in office this day next year?
Yes. Yeah, I think he will be. Mm-hmm. I think there's a relatively decent chance that he won't be running for re-election.
Yeah,
but I think
really. Here's the thing. I mean, they've already merged the Trump victory 2020 with the RNC.
Point you made last week.
Yeah, and to me that's jaw dropping. Just because I'm old and I've worked in politics for a lot of years, and I've never heard anything like that. So the
incumbent's campaign merges with the RNC.
Yeah, there's always been overlap, of course, but they've always had separate entities, and this just tells you the Republicans are all in on this guy.
Right, that is interesting. I mean, if you do think about it, it's kind of a bellwether, because think of all of the things that could go wrong between now and, I don't know, when the campaign really gets up and running, and yet they are, as Scott says, the same entity.
There was a very good column in the Tribune in the last couple of days, an op-ed, and I'm sorry, I don't know the days because I see so much online and so on, but it basically talked about how Trump's support is going to be eroding over this over the course of this year. That especially if the economy doesn't come back from its this you know steady up go to an upward slope.
I read that piece.
Slope.
It was a nice litany of all of his pros and cons, but
saying that this support of his, which is not that robust as it is going to start eroding, and then there's going to be some turning point. The writer thinks where Republicans are going to say that hitching our wagon to this guy is not politically advantageous, and then you may really see an erosion of his support. In Washington, I mean, right now, the idea of impeaching him, which I don't think is going to happen, is really unthinkable because it would just be this performative political act, the same way that the Republicans impeached Bill Clinton, even though there was no chance they were going to remove him from office. I think that the Democrats have learned from that would be a silly thing to do.
Let's make that the next question then, okay. Because I, like you guys, think he will be president this day next year. I, like you, Eric, don't know that he will run for re-election, either because of, in spite of what Scott says, the Republicans decide that he's not a worthy candidate, or because he can read the writing on the wall, which it would be hard to imagine, wouldn't it?
And yes. He could probably get a doctor to make up some excuse for him that he couldn't run again.
The know? Same guy.
The same guy.
Which, by the way, it was him. Okay, but then you neither think nor will predict that the House is going to impeach him. Is that correct?
I think there's going to be a lot of talk like that, but I can't imagine there, unless something new pops up.
And Scott, would it be a bad idea for Democrats strategically to do that?
Well, what it does is, because the process is long, if it begins in 2019 at any point, this drags into 2020. Now, all of a sudden, the 2020 election becomes a referendum. Do we impeach this guy or not? Does that make sense?
So, yeah, no, it totally makes sense. And I think that Democrats will see that. What's the old saying? If you're going to aim for the king, you got to kill the king. And if the Democrats realize they don't have the support in the Senate to actually remove him from office, then impeachment becomes this act of futility that you end up losing. You end up looking like losers.
Right.
So
Trump needs a target. Trump needs a target. He needs somebody to fight in order to justify his existence. He's always fighting or pushing back on somebody.
Yeah.
This is something Nancy Pelosi needs to pay attention to. They need to really, you know, they've sort of got him or the Republicans on their heels, but they need to, I don't know, not pile on isn't maybe the best way to put it, but they need to be strategic about how they treat him.
Right.
Let him fall on his own sword, maybe.
Yes. And so, and he's going to run in 2020 as Harry Truman did in 1948. I've mentioned this before. The won't do Congress won't do. And he's going to point to the Democrats as being, they're the ones who won't give me the wall. They're the ones that want all these horrible, awful, disease-ridden, corrupt immigrants in your country and are taking your jobs. And
well since you bring up the wall that John thinks we should give to Trump, I say, well, not a Christmas present anymore, but maybe a New Year's gift or for Valentine's Day.
It's right around the corner.
Give him this wall. It seems to me that he is losing that argument, and the Democrats sense that he's losing his
haven't
argument.
They come down on the Republican side, aren't they at 2.6 they say they'll take? If he hasn't the president agreed to 2.6 as opposed to 5,
but he wants to spend it on a wall. I think the Democrats are willing even to go higher than that, as long as the money doesn't go toward a wall. If it goes toward other border security methods,
so it comes down to one word, right?
Oh, I
one
think it does.
Letter
oh,
word.
And
wall.
One thing Trump said yesterday when his trip overseas, where
correct.
he said that they're not giving me a wall because I want a wall. And in some ways, that's true. In some ways, he has built up the symbolism of this wall to such a degree that to give him his wall is to capitulate to him, not to have some sort of reasonable compromise on border security. And that's where, I mean, he created the negotiating conditions that are so toxic.
That's the thing he never gets. This is the point I make every week. Of course they're not going to give you the wall because they don't like you. I'll be transparent about it. Even if the wall were a good idea, it would be a tough sell. It's not guaranteed it's a good idea anyway, but he's made it so much more difficult for Democrats to meet him, even at 2.6 when they're at 1.6 themselves. I mean, it's $1 billion amongst friends, for crying out. It's just $1 billion. No, but I mean, that's nothing.
No, you're right.
That's nothing on a federal budget.
That's what it is all about the symbolism right now. It's about the symbolism. Are we capitulating? Are the Democrats capitulating?
And so should they just say, oh, what the hell? I have family members who aren't getting paid this week, right? Should they just go ahead and give him the wall and be done with it?
This is a staring contest right now between the Democrats and Trump. And who's going to blink first? Seriously, is Trump going to just keep holding out? And who gets hurt Now, Scott had a pretty funny cartoon. Was it today?
I don't know. Because you get them and then they go online and then they run the paper.
He sends them to me for my approval, I think.
I don't think it's just you, Eric.
No, Scott sends them out a day early usually. And anyway, so, well, why don't you describe it? But it represents the federal government and is very.
It's four desks and one of them's empty and all of the other three federal workers are leaning on their, just sleeping on their desks saying, and looking at, referring to the empty desk saying, told you Basil wasn't important, wasn't essential.
I mean, not totally fair, as Scott's cartoons often are not totally fair, but the point being that who is getting hurt here really by this government shutdown?
Can I throw something in here, which is crazy, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. We have become such a wussy country, and even our shutdowns, I mean, less than 25% or less of the government. Back in my day, when Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich shut down the government, it shut it down, man. It was shut down.
They call this a partial government shutdown.
Which is, it's just sort of like, it reminds me of what happened with Rauner here with the budget stuff. That's just sort of,
budget kept going on continuing resolutions, which was worse than having an actual budget in Illinois.
So why not have a real shutdown? I mean, if these and have real pain, and then we can actually have a real discussion. But we don't, we won't, and so.
They had that NORAD thing following Santa Claus on Christmas.
And the president telling a 7-year-old, you believe in Santa Claus? That's marginal.
This is marginal.
The marginal.
Have a very marginal,
so marginal
Christmas. There's a 7-year-old on the other end of a phone line. I think it was a little girl.
Yeah.
You can just imagine how perplexed she must have been. A, she's not sure what marginal means, maybe, or its application in this case. And if what he's really doing is winking, going, you know, what is and isn't the truth about this, what a stupid thing for an adult to say to a kid they don't know.
Oh, it was horrible. He's a horrible human
being.
Those
are hard calls to make. I think that's one of the trappings of the presidency, that you've got to do this. It's for public consumption. You don't know this kid. Oh, kids are funny on the phone.
It's not a hard call. A hard call is when you're calling the family of a fallen serviceman. That's a hard call. This is easy. This ought to be 101 for a president.
Yeah, this is.
Are we gonna see his tax returns this year?
God, no.
Eric, that was one of the questions you posted.
I think we are. Yes.
Why would you think
we are? Because I think they're going to come out through Congress. I think Congress is going to subpoena them, and they'll leak. Or they'll just be part of the record.
I'm still amazed that it's not a certainty that we'll see the Mueller report. I think we should see every dotted I and crossed T.
Okay, wait. I'm sorry. This is kind of new to me. What are you saying?
It is not. No, whatever report Mueller writes is not in its entirety going to be released to the public.
It goes to the Attorney General, right, first, and then the Attorney General decides whether he wants to release it. But again, I think the Democratic Congress can subpoena that. I think they have a great deal of authority here.
After all of this, I mean, if we don't know what we've found out, then what was the purpose of this thing? To turn it over to Congress, who no one trusts or likes, or to the president, or to the Attorney General, who's a little more than handpicked right now and lied about his All-American status? Did you see that? So Whitaker, right? Is that his name?
Yeah.
So he's a bright guy, and he was a wrestler at Iowa, but he incorrectly said that he was an academic All-American. He was not. He was not an academic All-American. He did get regional status for his academics, and then that is in essence your application for academic All-American status, which he did not receive. But in his federal applications and on his resume and to anybody that asks, he says he is an academic All-American. That's petty, isn't it? But I mean,
no,
the point is
par
trust.
For the course.
It's just the truth, and it's so negotiable with these people. That, my point, if Mueller writes a report and we submit it to these guys, I then what was the point of writing a report? I don't understand.
So I'm assuming the Attorney General can redact what he or she feels.
You just see hundreds of pages,
yes,
of black lines.
There may be some classified material in there, but I don't think that he's going to be able to get away with just simply sitting on it. Because of the Democrats in Congress, and because, I mean, public opinion at some point is going to say, wait a minute, you know, we've had this, you know, this investigation for a year and a half. We want to see what's going on. And the other thing is that Mueller has been sort of revealing his hand slowly through these indictments and other court filings.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a total mystery.
Yeah, I suppose.
But I think I really respect the investigation only because there have been so few leaks.
Yeah. Yeah. You just wonder if there isn't a bombshell that they're going to drop. And could they have kept that under wraps this long? You know, the long the longer it goes, in some ways, the less optimistic. They're saying end of February, they're going to be done. And if at least NBC News is saying that. And if that's the case, then not only are they near the finish line, but you wonder if they've been able to keep something gigantic that quiet for this long. Do you think there's going to be a bombshell? Or is it just going to be sort of a lot of fine and unfortunate points?
Oh, by bombshell, this is I didn't ask a question about this in my survey because it's sort of you need a specific way to answer a question like that. Like, what is a bombshell? What does that mean? Is there going to be information in there that is deeply troubling about the president and his business dealings and his dealings with Russia? Yes. Is there going to be some evidence that he was actually on the phone with Putin or someone during the campaign? No.
No, I
don't think
there's
going to be anything that's going to just
smoking gun like aha actionable. Like, we now have
everyone's going to turn 90 degrees on this. Everyone who supports him is going. I mean, for instance, I don't think there's going to be anything like the Watergate tapes, the revelations of the Watergate tapes, which did in Nixon so precipitously. I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, maybe, but I would say no.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not even sure if it's a good idea for them to go after the president's tax returns anyway. I mean, you could if you want, but you know, let's not do to Donald Trump what the previous Congresses have done to Hillary Clinton, say, or Bill for that matter. I just don't know that settling scores or demonstrating your animus, which is already apparent, is all that valuable right now.
But that's the cycle we're in. It's childish. It's unproductive. But we're facing.
And Eric endorses that tit for tat.
Yeah, he does. I know.
And that makes. And
I'm right here. Hey, no. I mean, to act like this, there's nothing. Like this is just we're looking like, oh, look, he wrote off his. Didn't the Clintons write off their underwear? Didn't we find that out?
Yeah, they donated their underwear. Yes.
They donated old underwear. We're not looking. I don't think they're looking for things like that. I think they are looking for some serious financial malfeasance on the part of Trump. And I think that's why these tax returns are going to be interesting. We're going to see what is going to bolster what was in those New York Times reports about what a fraudulent, skeezy, sleazy businessman he is. And that is actually kind of important. This isn't like, yeah. Oh, look, he wrote off his underpants. So.
You know, it's funny. If Bertrand were here, I think, if you guys never made it, I could do this podcast because I know some of your parts. But Steve would say, crimes are crimes. It's important. If that were Obama or Bush or Clinton or any previous president and we had any one of these, we would say, oh, my God, this is a really serious breach. And yet, because it happens every single day with this presidency, we don't take them at the face value they deserve.
Well, then it becomes a question of legislation. And do we pass a law that says if you run for president, you have to release your tax returns?
I would be okay with that.
I'd go for that.
I'd be down with that, too, frankly. But
I mean, it's just an extension of the financial disclosure.
Well, let's segue to state politics for a minute, then, and city politics. Because you also asked about Ed Burke. And I don't know what the most important question is for Ed Burke. Like, will he be indicted or will he go to jail or do we even know what the crime is? It seems to me like it's probably some sort of overlap of his public and private business.
Yes, yes.
NPR
no.
did a great
question.
NPR in partnership with ProPublica?
BGA.
BGA. And they looked at his voting record and his relationships, and it's pretty damning.
Because where he recuses himself, the Better Government Association and BEZ said, where he'll recuse himself from votes, he'll declare Article 14 and say, I'm not going to vote on this because I have a perceived conflict of interest. He chairs the committees that, navigate these things through City Hall anyway. His stamp is on it. So his vote isn't always the most important thing. It's how this whole process happens that matters the most. The process being either clients of his or business of the city. And as the chair of the finance committee, he can really manipulate things to his client's advantage.
You know, the only thing I didn't ask about Burke, I did ask whether he's going to be indicted, and I think the answer is yes. I think he will
yes.
be. Just that's if you're just looking at the tea leaves. The other question is he going to win his race for re-election? Now, he's in a heavily Hispanic district, and he's won for years in a demographically disadvantageous district. There are three Hispanic candidates, one of them backed by Chuy Garcia, who probably are going to take him into a runoff. And if the news gets worse for him during this runoff, I could see him losing that race.
I don't know his district that well, but it just seems to me like the guys that have the levers of power are able to transcend demographics.
Yeah. Oh, they have. But there was one, and I'm forgetting the name, but there was one just recently. in Chicago. Why am I forgetting this?
But an alderman who lost the race?
There was an alderman who lost. Or was it a state rep? Maybe it was a state rep.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Burke? The other Burke?
Yeah, I'm not going to help you
on
this.
I think it was. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I'm pretty sure, yes.
He's vulnerable. When they said that, I thought, really? This Burke is vulnerable? How can that be?
What's he been?
50 years, right? 50
yeah,
years?
Yeah. I think that's wishful thinking on a lot of people's parts. I just see him as having a lock on that district. And if he does what Madigan does in his district, which is just remarkable constituent services that gold standard stuff. You're not gonna lose re-election.
Gold standard stuff. That's kind of interesting. I mean, you make it sound virtuous.
I think it's brilliant. We had dinner recently with a couple we met recently, and they live in a Madigan's district. And things like every month, someone comes to your door and knocks and says, "Hey, everything okay? How are things going here?" And they said, "Well, yeah. Do you know a tree removal service? Because we're looking at this tree in our front yard." They had no idea with it. They just assumed this guy had could help them find somebody. The next morning they wake up and they're hearing, and someone is there with a Madigan on the side of the truck.
Really?
They're cutting down their tree. Their alley is plowed. Their trash is picked. I mean, it just...
Right. So that's virtuous stuff, unless it comes at the expense of other neighborhoods or other resources. And if there is sort of a quid pro quo down the line with somebody, I think all of these guys are at least a little stinky. And I think the longer you're there, the stinkier you get. Too bad, but I think absolute power or long-term power corrupts absolutely. I don't think anybody should be in the city council for 50 years. Nobody should do anything for 50 years. Eric, term limits, city council, go.
You know, I have this long-standing philosophical objection to...
I know this. I could do your part on this, too.
So I didn't even really need to be here for this this question. I'm really in favor of leadership position term limits. I don't think someone should be committee chair or party leader or Speaker of the House, President of the Senate. I think those terms should be severely limited. But in terms of telling the voters, you can't send this guy back to office because it's working so well.
We do know well that at least too much power is or power for too long is a bad idea. That's human nature, Eric. Your argument's academic.
It is academic, and you can see my vehemence is dialed down on this. I think that having a two-term limit for president of the United States is a good idea.
Yeah.
We had FDR, and that turned out okay.
Yeah. Well, you'd have Barack Obama would still be president if you did not have a two-term limit.
Maybe not.
I wonder if Obama-Trump race, that would have been interesting. That would have been really interesting.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that for a second, Scott. Wasn't that what Hillary Clinton was? But no, it was more than that. It was more than that.
She's not cool.
She had the emails.
I know. Jeez. Yeah, she had emails. You also asked, will Blago get out of jail early or should he? Eric Zorn,
say should he. I said Woody.
Woody. I am more inclined to say yes now than ever.
I said no on your survey. I took the survey online, but thinking about it, that's one of those questions that I did stop and go,
I'm going to say no, but I'm like 52% no. I'm this close to saying yes.
Yeah, me too.
I said yes in my own survey, and the reason is that I think Trump has just been sending out these signals, and he's just hanging on to this for a slow news, or for a big news week where he needs to distract public attention.
Well,
from
and he can be played, and
thing.
Patty Blagojevich is playing him masterfully.
Yes.
She continues to go on Fox. She did a couple of weeks ago again. And got a real sympathetic interview on Fox News where they use her as sort of an example of the overreach of federal prosecutors because that's what happened to her husband. And so she then says it's like what they're doing to this president is what they've done to my father.
It's completely a lie.
Fox eats that up. He eats that up. And you can just see him throwing down on
that. And didn't you see? I thought that the stars were in alignment for a Christmas pardon. Or not? I don't know if he's going to pardon him, but he may just commute his sentence. That'd be more likely, just commuting his sentence, saying, you've served long enough time for this. It was like the stars were lined up for. I don't think Trump did any Christmas commutations or pardons.
But he was sneakily heading off to Iraq, and I think he timed that just so. I don't know if you were following much social media Christmas Day, but there was a lot of first president in so many years to not visit the troops in a war-torn country. And then on the 26th, he emerges with the First Lady, which never happens in a combat zone in Iraq. And he turns it into a little bit of a political statement for himself. But it was a lot of thumb in your nose at the Democrats and liberal media that were saying, aha, this president is either indifferent or a coward. Those were the words they were debating.
The timing of the trip was very well played. I was disappointed by his all the politicking he did there. I mean, talking about domestic politics in front of the troops and then lying to them about the raise that he gave them and so on. I don't know. I'm not impressed.
I always wonder.
Oh, I'm impressed. I mean, I think it's an amazing thing for a president to do. It always is when W did it, when Obama did it, now when Trump does it. I think it's admirable. It's a good thing to do.
I'm not particularly impressed by this.
It's important to do.
And I'm glad he did it. And you know,
I'm saying the optics of it though are just very, very smart. You're right about the the thing is, people don't hear the words. They see him standing with the troops and they're doing selfies and he's being nice to your
nephew. And the troops seem to be genuinely happy that the president is there. I've always wondered about those. When they do it in a gymnasium with a bunch of teachers and students, or say at a base where there's a bunch of soldiers, maybe there's a predisposition in the military for the guys to be fans of his, but maybe not. Maybe it's a mixed crowd. I always wonder if those people are pre-selected to make sure that they'll not embarrass the president.
Have you ever been in a room where the president... It's electrifying, and even if you don't care for the president, it's still a pretty awesome moment.
You get swept up in
it. I think so, yeah.
And he is their commander in chief, so they have to show respect to him. They can't boo him or
no, but this was funny. They were doing selfies.
I think you're right. I think that, yeah, when you look at the reaction, and also some of the media pool reports were talking about the reaction. Most of them were very thrilled that he was there and so on.
Mel, I think it reminds them that they're not forgotten. You know, what are we doing in Iraq? Are we safe? Will I come home next Christmas for my family? Oh, the president's here. Even if I don't like him, that means they're paying attention to us.
Yeah.
That has to feel good. Will we get a graduated income tax in the state of Illinois?
Hell yeah.
And are you for that, Scott Stannis?
No.
Yeah, you don't want that.
I have actually a totally opposite answer to that. I think
this is another Eric Zorn survey question.
I think we will not get it. I think the Democrats will figure out some way not to do this. They have in the past. Pat Quinn tried to promote this. He had former Democratic Governor Pat Quinn had significant Democratic majorities in the General Assembly and was promoting this graduated income tax and couldn't get it past Madigan.
Democrats want that?
This is all about how Mike Madigan manages to keep his power. And one of them is he doesn't force a lot of downstate legislators to take difficult votes. And I think this would be played to people like Scott and others as just a tax increase on everybody and a really bad idea. And it's controversial. I happen to think that you look at the states where you have graduated income taxes and they are doing a lot better than Illinois.
Yeah.
The federal income tax is graduated. The basic principle is if you make more, you should pay a higher percentage.
And yet, to consolidate his power or preserve it, you say that we won't have.
I don't think so. There's a very interesting article in today's Tribune, Thursday's Tribune, by Rick Pearson talking to Pritzker and some of the other Republican leaders about the year coming forward. Because again, the Democrats have these oppressive supermajorities in both houses of the General Assembly plus the governorship. What are they going to do about it? And there's a lot of kind of mamby-pamby talk from the Democrats about, well, we want to really get along. We want bipartisan solutions. It's not like, hey, it's our turn now. Step out of the way. And I think that they'll back off. I mean,
I don't know. And first of all, the bipartisanship, come on. Why? They haven't done it before. They're not going to do it again now that they have the supermajority again.
Oh, they have done it before. I mean, before... Even you were here, Scott.
There was nothing before.
When you were a little boy, they did.
You're talking about Jim Edgar, George Ryan. I mean, the idea back then was that Madigan really liked to have Republican governors because he could deal with them, and they could create these sort of solutions or legislative initiatives that looked bipartisan. That kind of bipartisanship hadn't, the fierce bipartisanship hadn't infected Springfield the way it has in the last.
Okay, here come Eric Zorn's sports questions. I've amended yours on the White Sox. Will they win 500 games? Will they be a 500 team?
Yes.
They'll win more than half their games in 2019.
That requires 81 or two victories?
81.
No, I'd say no.
Yeah, okay. I really want them to They're on this radio station.
Yes, so I just got back
from a week in Mexico with the guys.
You love those guys now.
I do. They're besties, and I don't think they're going to win 500.
Well, here's what, and one of the reasons I also predict that they're not going to get Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, these coveted free agents, and that their rebuilding is going to continue into this year. I mean, they won 62 games last year, so you're talking about winning
20 more games.
20 more games, basically. I doubt it.
A third again is good. You won 60, win a third of that again to get to 80.
Yeah, I think they're...
Are you a White Sox fan or a Cubs fan? You were told by John Cass to be a Cubs fan.
I was told to be a Cubs fan, but when they're not playing each other, I pull for Chicago teams.
Why did Cass tell you to be a Cubs fan?
He was new in town. I live on the north side.
Okay.
I was new in town. I asked him. I was confused. Because you can actually track the decline of American culture to the institution of the designated hitter rule. It's math. You can't deny it.
Mm. Well, I'm kind of a downer. I think the Bears are going to lose in the playoffs before they get to the NFC Championship. I don't think the Cubs are even going to make the playoffs this year.
Well, that's your next question that I've amended. Will the Cubs win the NLDS? Will they at least get to the NLCS, right? I mean, well, I think most of us have the Cubs as a good team.
Yes.
And they've still got the chops to make the playoffs. Do you think they'll win the divisional championship, whatever that may be?
No, I don't think they will.
Really?
I don't. I'm
pessimistic after
Eeyore today.
I saw, after what happened this past season, now how many teams in the history of sports, any sport, including professional drone racing, can say that they lost two games in a row, losing a championship in each game, and the opposing team celebrated on their field? That is a level of Cubness that I don't think will ever be matched.
And they lost like 40 games by one run.
Yeah, it was an exciting season, but
or were they scored only one run?
They had a lot of come from behind victories too. I mean, it was really exciting season, but
it is great.
Ultimately disappointing. Where are we on the NLDS? Will they win the NLDS?
Yes.
I say no. Scott says yes.
No.
Eric says no.
They're not
going
to make it there.
Do the Bears win the Super Bowl? Win the Super Bowl.
That team.
Go out on a
limb.
When
I saw them go out and play some teams that they had to beat, and they beat them, I'm thinking this team can get to the Super Bowl.
How about you?
They can. Did you notice that answer? They can, but he's not saying they will.
Okay. Do I have to predict? I will go out on a limb and say, yes, the Bears will be in the Super Bowl this year.
And will they win it?
No.
Okay, I have them winning the Super Bowl.
You do? I have them not even making the NFC Championship.
Who hurt you, Eric? You hate everybody.
No, I don't hate everybody. I love them.
Will Jim Boylan be the Bulls coach next year?
No.
I'd be surprised if he's the Bulls coach at the end of this year.
I think he might be. I'm saying yes.
Really? Wow. He's coming back next year. Eric, I will bet you $5,000 that he will not be.
he wants me to put up
$5,000. And by that, I mean $5. I will bet you $5,
$5
that Boylan will not be the starting
$5
coach next year.
It is either way. I'm talking about a year from now. I mean, a year from now, he's going to be coach. That means he's got to make it through the first weeks of the season next year.
Yeah, he will not be on the bench at the start of the season.
I think management likes him, and I think he's going to slowly start turning it around. He's apparently a good coach, so we'll see.
What do you guys make of the high school kid in New Jersey who got his hair cut before the wrestling match?
I've only got a cursory understanding of it that the official who had apparently issues in the past...
He had made a slur at another black man.
Yeah,
an official.
That
making
this kid cut off their dreadlocks and seeing the locks, they weren't. I don't understand why this had to happen.
Yeah, one thing I don't understand about the story is that you're supposed to cut the kids with long hair, dreadlocks. Participate in high school wrestling, but they have to wear like some sort of head covering.
That's right.
Or I don't know if it's a hairnet.
The head covering has to be attached to the uniform, and they did not have an appropriate hair covering. Previously, when he did not have the appropriate hair covering, he was allowed to wrestle. It sounds like a technical thing. Maybe he had a net or some sort of hair covering, but previously it wasn't the official correct kind. This official hewed to the letter of the law and said, because it's not the exact appropriate designated type, you can't wrestle. The mistake, according to some officials in New Jersey, is that previously other officials had allowed him. This guy then says, here's the letter of the law. And, oh, no, a couple of years ago, he used a racially insensitive term, and now he's seen as racist. My problem with this story is, Scott, it was mishandled. The kid had 90 seconds to decide if he was going to cut his dreadlocks off or not. And then it was done in such a humiliating way.
Yeah.
And there was no appreciation for the sense of self that hair you know, means to a teenager, let alone a black teen male. So it was just such a spectacle. My problem with the story is that we are calling the official racist when we really don't know what his motivation was.
It was sure as hell demeaning, though, and that was its intent. I mean, I have to believe that that was, let's subtract the official's history. You got to cut your hair. First of all, really, it's a wrestling match. I think we're okay with this. Second.
We are. We're okay with this. We're okay with not following the rules.
Well, apparently other officials were.
You're right. Keep going.
So there's a history here. Yep. But cutting his hair and doing it in front of, on the mat or in front of an audience. I mean, that is meant to degrade the human being.
Here's who I think failed. It's his own coach.
Yes.
They won that by like 28-42 or something. I forget the exact score, but it didn't sound like they needed that point. They could have, his coach should have intervened and said, you know what, son, I'm not going to put you in this position. I'll make the decision. You're not wrestling. You can be mad at me later. You can cut your hair later, but you're not going to do it under these circumstances. Where was the adult in the room?
I totally agree with that. And also the opposing coach probably ought to have stepped in and said, wait a minute, you know, if we will agree that this match never happened, you know, and even maybe parents in the room, I mean, people, it was very strange to me. My understanding of the story is that it just kind of happened.
Yeah.
And the kid really had to make a decision right on the spot. And he made a decision that was kind of noble in a way. I mean, he decided that he would wrestle for his team and give up his dreadlocks rather than forfeit. Which is kind of it's a very team-oriented decision. You got to give the kid credit for that.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I mean, I kind of agree with you, John. It's hard to look into the heart of this official. I don't even know the circumstances of the other incident, whether he was, you know, kidding around with somebody, because sometimes these things will amount to somebody using a word he shouldn't use in what he thinks is a jocular fashion, and not, you know, he's not like, you know, giving someone the finger and calling him an ethnic name. So I don't know the circumstances of that. But it's one of those things where you think like, oh my goodness, it's just handled so poorly, and it's open to so many interpretations.
And the kid has done everything right since too. You know, he's not saying that the coaches or the there's a litany of people that others are saying they failed you, they failed you. We need to sue them. We need to go after them. They need to lose their jobs, and he's saying no to all of that, with the exception of the official. And they're waiting for a fuller investigation to determine what's going to happen. The school said that they'll never participate in a wrestling match that man is an official at now.
Oh, wow.
So he's going to be ostracized career-wise, but I think the kid is doing it. You know, you can just see him sitting on the couch with Oprah Winfrey or, you know, one of the late-night talk comics and having a uplifting, sensitive, affirming conversation. I really hope the story goes that way.
I mean, can you imagine him doing something like that with a young white guy with long hair? Or even dreadlocks. I mean, white guys wear their hair in dreadlocks sometimes too. If you can imagine him doing that, then you can just maybe he's just too much of a stickler. Maybe he really secretly resents any hairstyle that's not just a conventional short hairstyle for men. Anything is possible here, but clearly, as you look at it, like, wow, so
the wrestling rules include how long your sideburns can be. I mean, it's I don't know if you know anything about wrestling, but it's remarkably detailed what the physical appearances of the wrestler is, because you don't want them to be able to grab hair or grab a beard and then pull your head down. It's not safe, and it would be advantageous to the other guy, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a whole bunch of rules about appearance that may seem trivial in any other sport but wrestling. Okay, let's do our recommendations, guys. We're getting the wrap here.
Okay.
So something you're reading, listening to, watching, eating, or drinking, Scott Stantis?
One of the great joys of putting your iPhone on shuffle is you find music that you'd forgotten about, and it just sort of pops up. There's a great musician, excuse me, a Cuban musician named Potato, P-A-T-A-T-O. He is phenomenal. I sent it off.
You say potato. Oh, never mind.
You say potato. Okay.
That's potato. Anyway.
San Francisco tiene su propio son. San Francisco tiene su propio son. Yo nací en La Habana Vieja.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a big fan of potato.
The Legend of Cuban potato. Percussion is what I was listening to. And so P-A-T-A-T-O, Potato, and he is amazing. If you love Cuban or Latin music, unbelievable.
How about you,
cool.
Mr. Zorn?
Mine is not as cool as that. it is actually a fairly old New York Magazine article called The Poison We Pick by Andrew Sullivan. And it's a very long, deep dive into the opioid epidemic. It talks about, you know, why it's the history of the poppy and of opium and of all the derivatives of opium. It talks about fentanyl. It talks about why this crisis has occurred and how unlikely it is that we're going to figure out a way to address it, because it is so pervasive, and the feelings that people have when they are on these drugs, which is something that most media never talk about because we don't want to say, like, hey, this is why people take these drugs, because this is how it makes them feel. He goes into that in some detail. It's Andrew Sullivan. It's called The Poison We Pick, NewYorkMagazine.com, NYMag.com.
Does it blame the pharmaceutical companies?
It talks about that. Yeah, it talks about how the pharmaceutical industry tried. They thought that they were tackling this problem when they were doing things like OxyContin. They thought that this would alleviate the addiction problem because OxyContin dispenses the palliative properties of these drugs over time, but apparently, you know, it actually wasn't quite as long as they thought, and it was just as addictive as the other stuff. So
my recommendation is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yes. Oh, very interesting. Yes.
You've watched it too?
Mm-hmm.
And you've liked it as well?
Very much.
Oh my God, have you ever seen anything as zany and fun as that?
Violent
and Coen Brothers-ish?
The Buster Scruggs, the lead, the title character, is such a great character. He's dressed in white, has this huge white hat, and he talks like a real, you know, like a real gentleman.
You think, a good old 1950s soap opera cowboy.
And he's a sociopath.
He is. And he can sing. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, it's six vignettes that together actually become a film eligible for, you know, Academy Award nominations, etc. You may not have seen this, but if Griffin and I watched it, Brenda didn't love it so much. It's on Netflix, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
It's the Coen Brothers.
Six vignette movie, just, you know, stories that are only loosely connected. And I couldn't take my eyes off it. That's my recommendation. Thank you, Eric Zorin.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Ben, who's leaving the podcast and the station.
And breaking our hearts.
Breaking our hearts, and had done such a great, was an important part of getting this.
And not just for the Mincing Rascals, but
yeah.
Ben has been a part of the WGN Radio family for years. He's been with the podcast since we've been doing it. And was it your son or daughter whose birth sort of coincided with my starting here?
It was my daughter. I was on paternity leave when you started, so I met you first day I came in.
And you listened and you thought, what?
This guy's voice sounds familiar. And I walked around MC trying to think of who it was. Then it dawned on me, Alan Alda. Which you didn't hear, by the way. And you couldn't hear the voice. But everybody kept texting in at the same time saying, it's Alan Alda in the air, not John Williams.
Every time I'm new somewhere, that's what people say. Well, we're going to miss you, buddy. Well done. Thanks for your help.
Thank you. And thanks for the friendship.
We're going to miss him both on the pod and at WGN. Elif Garris is our producer. That's Scott Stantis, Eric Zorin. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.